to episode 79 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Nick Rehack of French Toast Sunday. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Hopefully you're not drunk yet. You're still holding, you're waiting a little bit.
I'm with bated breath.
Okay, it's a little early in the podcast to get there. You know, might be a little late in the day, but it's early in the podcast.
Never too early. Well, or is it? We'll find out.
I don't know. We'll have to find out. So, basically, yesterday's episode ended with. Today's episode begins with Roger continuing his order. We get to finally hear what he actually is telling Mac, and goes all the way till Goff. Licking his palm, which is something interesting to discuss a little later today. We'll get to that. So, basically, yesterday's episode ended with Ramsey, Cavendish, and Mac pondering what possibly Hiltz and Goff are doing with the wagon loads or wheelbarrow loads of potatoes without really coming to any type of conclusion. And their discussion is cut off by Roger coming back to join the trio. And Roger starts saying, Mac, we'll close down. And today he finishes his sentence by saying, we'll close down Dick and Harry. Seal them off. Which is an interesting way to do it. Basically, he's come to the conclusion that we're close enough. Cavendish has said that they only have 50 feet left on Tom. So we're going to get out of... We're gonna use Tom and get out of here. So we're going to... devote all of our efforts only on digging through Tom.
Which I don't really like that. I can understand and appreciate that they want to, you know, make it to, you know, where it's going to be a lot darker and they want to get out of there, you know, sooner than later. But I think the smart play would have been like 75% on one tunnel and then maybe 25% on another. And maybe like the third tunnel that they had an idea was more of a, I don't know, an extravagant idea. Maybe pull back on that one. But I think having a backup would have been a little more safe and secure. But then again, it probably would have taken them into August, which they seemed reluctant to do to begin with. But I kind of wish they wouldn't have. I don't know. I just wish they would have kept one open.
Right. Well, I think the reason that they do it this way. I don't even know if logistically it's possible, because let's say you have four guys working at a time in each tunnel. Okay, so you have 12 guys digging. All right, all at the same time in each of the three tunnels at the same time. You know, they have 6-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts. I don't know what. However, they set up the shifts. It doesn't really make a difference. Okay, but mathematically, so okay, now we're gonna close up two of them. How are they gonna put all 12 guys in the same tunnel and be more effective? They're limited in their space.
I didn't even think about that.
You know, if you only have room for four guys to dig, so how are you making things faster? Is it because then you have more people at different intervals in order to pass the dirt back and stuff like that? But then, I mean, you have a lot of people anyway. That's the only thing I could think of. It makes it easier to, you know, it's a quicker pace of getting all the dirt out. That's the only real solution I can think of.
But even then, they would have to find ways of dispersal. I mean, yeah, you could kind of do a daisy chain and find a way to kind of get it out from the tunnel and maybe store it in a room temporarily. But until you're able to go through and figure out, like, okay, we're going to put it up to here, and then it goes here, it goes there, because if not, it's going to fill up really quick. And no, you could easily interchange out guys too.
But they're only getting from one tunnel instead of from three tunnels.
Right, but if they're still putting it all out, they still got to find like where to put it at. And if they're digging at night, they don't have a whole lot of opportunity to go like, oh, we're going to go put some over here, we're going to put some dirt over there. Like, it's going to pile up wherever they are, and then they have to take that much more time to disperse it.
Right. And now I remember when reading in the book, one of the things that they did was is when they decided to stop working on one of the tunnels, they actually started refilling that tunnel with the dirt.
Oh, okay.
So they You know, so in this that's something that really, you know, that genuinely happened. So let's say, okay, we're going to stop working on Harry. So let's take all the dirt from Tom that we're pulling out and put it into Harry and start filling up Harry. They would also hide things in the tunnels themselves.
That makes sense.
You know, a lot of their contraption and stuff like that, they would hide in other tunnels that weren't currently being dug. You know, that type of thing.
Okay, so like little extra storage pockets.
Okay.
All right, I'll buy that. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense then.
Yeah, but the I still have a problem. I agree with you. I have a problem with the logistical aspect of like, what's the point of cutting off the, you know, the work on all three? Because it doesn't sound as if it's going to make things more effective.
No. I don't.
I mean, it's possible that it is, but putting 12 guys on a 4-man job is not going to help.
Yeah, I was going to say that's
more crowded.
Yep.
And it's going to be hotter in there, and it's going to, you know, make the situation much more difficult.
Yeah, like just like you're saying, in theory sounds nice, but in application not so much.
Right. But okay, if Roger makes that order, then there's a reason for it again.
He's the boss.
That's right. There's a reason he's the boss.
Yeah.
And Mac just says, okay, no problem.
Pretty much. No, you say so.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea is, okay, put all the effort into Tom and we'll press off to the into the trees. You know, even though we're still 20 feet short. But that's a separate issue. You know, only Cavendish knows that. Then we get a new scene where we see Goff stumbling through a corridor inside one of the barracks, really stumbling because he keeps bumping into the sides. He's carrying these satchels that make him look like he's Santa Claus, because he's, you know, or maybe someone who just, you know, who just hit a house, you know, and is stealing everything. You know, they put everything.
He's a cat burglar.
Goff just robbed everyone.
Yeah. He's not the only.
Hey, look, I got a camera. I got a pickaxe.
I'm not the only scrounger here.
That's right. And so he like stumbles across again. This is we're back to another comical moment in the movie. I think the rest of this minute is completely comical anyway. So, but he stumbles across, and then he tries to get into the room, and he's not able to get into the room, and starts, you know, banging on the door a little bit with his back. And at this point, Hiltz opens the door and like pulls him in a very comical fashion. You know, it's something you would see in a cartoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that someone can't get through because he's either too fat or he's holding something, you know, that's too large. So someone just pulls him very, very firmly. And eventually, you know, they come out the other end. So it's a little too comical, in my opinion. Now, what's interesting is when we discussed this earlier in the week about where they are doing this, and apparently they're in some sort of storeroom, because you can see that there are, you know, six brooms on the side of the wall there.
Yeah, brooms, dozens of blankets. I'm trying to think of what's behind them to the right when they're standing in front of the door. I don't know if those are – they don't look like hats. I don't know. But there's like a cabinet, right, or something.
Well, I like the fact that there's a clipboard on the side, because that basically, okay, you got to sign out.
Oh, yeah, like they're keeping inventory. Oh, it's stock count today. Oh, I have seven brooms. Still got seven brooms. Okay.
There you go. Wait, there's one broom missing.
Who's got the broom? Check the sign out sheet.
There are all these – right. That's right. There are all these little boxes. Maybe that's where they kept the little film.
Maybe.
One of them looks like it says on a 3D. It actually says 30. But still, it looks funny that it looks like it's... This is the 3D film.
The Great Escape, the E is a 3.
There you go. Completely. And they empty out the different satchels that he's holding, and they're filled with potatoes. Obviously... These potatoes are not peeled yet, so they're going to be a little bit harder for them to do whatever they need to do here. And then we get Henley, who is for the first time actually in an undershirt, also very white, not as white as his turtleneck, yeah, but still quite white. And Goff is quite exhausted because he's now sitting down trying to catch his breath. And I mean, it looks like they're doing like a science experiment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what looks. It's hilarious to think about it. Now, I mean, I know nothing about brewing or anything like that. You might know a little more than I do about this. What's interesting is where did they get everything here for this equipment? You know, all these different, you know, pipes and you know, there are definitely things missing in the. Oh, you know what? I have an idea. In one of the first episodes, we noticed that someone was walking around with a trombone.
Yeah.
So maybe they took apart the trombone.
Yeah.
And used that because it does look like the rounded part of a trombone.
Yeah, and attached to like a pot, really, and maybe a trash can lid. The only thing that's throwing me is we see the horn of the trombone or the bell go up and curve. Then we see the slide part. But then there's that next piece that's kind of attached with string and rope. I don't know what that is or where they would have gotten it, like what that particular part is. Maybe when they zoom in on it, we'll see it. But yeah, I'm just noticing now that it's a trombone, which is fantastic because who would think to use a trombone to craft what they've crafted?
Yeah, but what's amazing is the fact that I actually noticed a trombone all those months ago. There was a guy who was just carrying a trombone with him, you know, completely randomly. It wasn't even something that and wow, this is one of the biggest finds of the movie, that in my opinion.
It's Chekhov's trombone.
Wow.
If you see a trombone in the first act, you got to use it by the second.
That's great.
Oh, man. I love this. I love this so much. I love how primitive it is, but it works. I've been to a handful of distilleries and taken tours. My brother is actually a brewer. He's been making beer for going on 10 years now. And I've watched him go from homebrewing kits, which is literally plastic tubes and 5-gallon buckets, to the machines that he works on now, these massive, you know, 200-barrel fermenters and bright tanks and all the machinery and everything. So as soon as I saw this, I'm like, all right, it's a still. And I still thought it was vodka because vodka is a potato-based liqueur. Then, you know, it seems a little bit stronger than that because of the reactions that they have to it when they finally partake in what's coming out. But what kind of surprises me, there's a liquid that starts to drip out and they dip their finger in there. And they immediately don't scream in pain because I see all the steam. Obviously, it's being heated by something. Wouldn't it be piping hot coming out of there, or is that me?
I think so. I would definitely think so.
Like, it's the only thing that I'm like, what?
I mean, I started doing a little bit of research as to how one would make this type of moonshine vodka. And one of the things that I read was, first of all, you have to ferment it for at least 2 weeks. So they're spending a lot of time on this if they're right now. I mean, but again, they're grinding up the potatoes and immediately drinking it. So something is off from that perspective, from what I can tell. You know, they weren't able to let it ferment as well. But one of the things that I found here that and again, I know nothing about booze or how to make it or even drink it. I don't drink because it just doesn't do anything for me. But I found online a chart that basically shows what percentage of the batch that you make, like what's drinkable and what's not. And so there's a thing called the four shots at the very beginning, which is 5% of what you've used. And it says that it contains methanol. Therefore, it's extremely volatile and toxic, and you should not consume this part of it. Okay, you probably should ask your brother who knows about these things about how that actually works. But my assumption is that that's what they're tasting right now. So forget about the fact that it's boiling hot.
Yeah, it's poison. And they must have had some rot gut in the past, and then they just go, wow.
One second. You got to hear this. It says, take care to isolate your four shots throughout and throw them out. Consuming methanol can cause an array of issues, including blindness. So now we know what happened to Blythe.
Wow.
Blythe has been siphoning off from their four shots.
And of course, he's roommates, so he would easily have access to it.
Wow. There you go. Even though they're in a closet. But, okay. And then it says the next 30% is known as heads. Okay, and it says these heads are filled with volatile alcohols, mostly known as acetone.
Oh.
And it says acetone has a distinct solvent-like smell, making its identification pretty easy for anyone with a working nose. Drinking your heads won't make you blind, but they will leave you with the worst hangover.
I would have to imagine so, if it's like acetone. And what I...
Exactly. Oh. And then, one second, here's the last line. Like your four shots, you'll want to isolate these and throw them out.
Classic. Well, waste not, want not, right?
Apparently, if you're already in Stalag Group 3, then who cares?
It's just funny because they're trying to hide it. Wouldn't somebody smell it? Wouldn't somebody hear Goff banging around and them trying? I love how when he pulls him in, he tries to like quietly close the door behind it and lock it. Like there's too much noise and too much smell for someone not to know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. So the third part of the brew is another 30%. It's the sweet spot of the vodka run, known as the hearts. And what it says is that you'll notice the solvent smell of acetone taper off and a sweet-smelling ethanol come forward. This is where a skillful distiller really shines. Maximizing high-quality hearts is a game of the senses. By accurately identifying where the acetone stops and the ethanol begins, a distiller maximizes their number of high-quality jars of product. The main giveaways are the solvent smell of acetone and the sweet, smooth taste of ethanol. So, this is great, isn't it?
How about now? No? Okay. How about now?
No, not yet. This is it's too much like acetone. And then you get the final stage, known as the tails. So the final 35% of your vodka run will be the tails. The tails contain protein and carbohydrates from the wash that you don't want in your product. You can actually set the tails aside and run them as their own wash in the future to pull out a bit more product. The best way to identify tails is the steep drop in sweetness as ethanol concentrates decrease. You'll also begin to see an oily film on top of the product. So, I found this very interesting. Like I said, I'm not a drinker at all, but it's just hilarious that what I just learned in a few minutes on Google tells me that they're all drinking poison.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, and that's probably why they get the slight reaction that they do with like, "Hey, we not only did we made this work, like, oh, this is poison. Like, this is what's gonna make it happen, fellas." That's funny.
Yeah, completely. Now, the part of the contraptions that they use, it looks like they're using what one would use to mince meat. You know, they're like they're mincing potatoes.
It does look like that, and it kind of makes me curious as to why, because we don't really see anything coming out of it, right? Especially when you have Hiltz, he's spinning his around and nothing. I mean, it looks jammed up and gunked up, to be honest, like nothing's coming out.
Yeah.
But I'm curious as to, because I've never seen it done with potatoes, like corn and wheat, sure, but with potato, I'm wondering what the process would be of how you have to open it up to get the starches out. Could you cube it, dice it, slice it, mash? But I guess in this one, they just want to mince it, like you said, as best they can.
Right. You know, then they see that the pot starts boiling and they run around to try and check out what's coming out of the pipe. And then they see a little bit of booze come out. So then you get McQueen stick his finger out and taste it and goes, wow. and then Henley dips in his finger in and then he gives his wow. And then we get Goff, who doesn't even take a finger. He puts his whole hand there. He palms it. How much can I get? Yeah. And he puts his whole... What's funny is he puts it on his palm and he licks his fingers.
And the reactions are great. Because Because they'd look over, one in complete shock, like, I can't believe you just did that. And the other one excited, like, yeah, this is going to backfire.
Completely. And as we've just established, all three of them just drank complete poison. You know. So, you know, it's just very interesting to see. I think I heard somewhere or read somewhere that they were all trying to outdo one another with their wows.
I can see that being a thing.
To show how good of an actor each of them could be, that they can try and make it seem even more potent than it really is. Because my assumption is that they're tasting water.
Probably, and they're like, "Hey, that's my assumption. Fellas, we're gonna have an incredulous off. Whoever can be the most incredulous, they win the prize."
That's true. All right, you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Let me see. Potatoes, check. No, that counts off my list.
All right, great. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Catch me on Twitter, at TheRehack, TheReHak. I have a little radio show. It's called Rehack Radio. You can find it on Mixcloud.com. Every Tuesday, an episode drops. It's about an hour long. It's fun. It's fun facts. It's me. It's music. All around, it's a good time.
All right. Sounds like fun. While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to the show. You can find us on Twitter at GreatEscapeMXM. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our email address is greatminute@gmail.com. And our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. So, Nick, you want to come back tomorrow and finish off the week with us?
I would love to.
All right. Excellent. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.